Nationally, we heard a little earlier on that people are going to spend well over 400 million euro between Black Friday and Cyber Monday. Why not spend that money in Donegal? Because we are in the throes now of hashtag Buy Donegal for 2025. It runs from November 24th to December 19th, and it promotes Donegal businesses for the festive season. Anne-Marie Conlon is Head of Economic Development with Donegal County Council and is with me now. Hi, Anne-Marie. Lovely to see you again. How are you keeping?
Hi, Greg. Keeping well. Thank you very much.
Good stuff. Right. So this, I mean, I'm not sure if it was ever the case, but we're not, people aren't acting to, aren't being asked to look at Donegal businesses as some sort of a charity job here. It's to recognise that we have amazing businesses right across the county offering real value for money, real customer service, and, you know, supporting the county through commercial rates and the community through employment, etc., etc. It's a case of make sure you check out to see what you can get locally.
That's it exactly, Greg. And we've been doing this campaign since 2020. And really, I think every year I kind of look at all the different products that we have available. And it's just, they're just beautiful. Like some of the designer pieces that we have, some of the craft businesses, some of the services, the foods and the drink producers. So we really have a beautiful array of products that are made and produced here in Donegal. And we also have great businesses that are operating from Donegal. And it's really just about kind of putting a spotlight on that and showing people, you know, that there are really good kind of special gifts that you could buy this year as part of the, you know, the Christmas season. And particularly as well for those people who are far from home or who have a strong connection to Donegal, that they can go on by donegal.ie and have a look at some really nice special kind of Donegal gifts if they like for their loved ones.
Yeah, so because if you go on Amazon, for an example, and I will say that, fantastic, use it all the time, right? But I mean, if you're looking to get someone special in your life, something a little bit different, right? You know what the landing page looks like, right? It's electronics and it's all. But you go to the Buy Donegal, it's different because the gifts are often of a higher quality, something a little bit different to spark an idea, you know, whether it's a scarf or it's a painting or whatever it might be, you know, something that seems that there's a little bit more thought and care went into it. What I'm trying to say is this is helping the guys out a bit, I think.
Yeah, no, that's it. Absolutely. And it's kind of putting a spotlight because we don't always know what we have. And, you know, the grass is always greener sometimes, you know, when you think of other places. But when you actually look at what we have in Donegal and the beautiful produce that we have and the really good craftspeople, it's a good opportunity, you know, to I suppose, to get something special. But it's also a great opportunity for our businesses as well to kind of come together and support each other, which is a big part of it as well. And to do a wee bit of cross-selling. So, and really what Buy Donegal is, it's like a directory. So you kind of go into the website, you look, you can find, it's really nicely laid out. You can find all the different businesses that are there. And then you go into their websites. So it's not like, you know, so we don't actually sell anything on buydonegal.ie. We just use it as a directory or as an access point for the business's website. So you're dealing directly with the business. They're getting, you know, they're getting the revenue directly to them. And it's supports them in terms of the work that they do. So it's a way, I suppose, of us helping the businesses to be innovative in their marketing, to be collaborating and supporting each other, and also to look at like maybe brands that align with their own brand. So they could be looking at maybe an opportunity to kind of team up with another business to, you know, put together a really nice offering as well. So like there's lots of potential and lots of different opportunities. And one of the really, I think one of the areas we're just looking at yesterday on the website was our visitor offers. You know, so people like to maybe look at a gift now. It might be a weekend away or a midweek break. And there's some really nice offers there for people that might be thinking of coming to Donegal or even people from Donegal that are just thinking of having a night away within in the county somewhere. So even just to go into buydonegal.ie and click in and the offers are there. And again, as I said, it goes straight to the business's website. So you're dealing directly with the people that are providing the product or the service for you.
Yeah. And it's so, you know, I mean, obviously I went straight to the crafts and stuff, but it's far beyond that. You know, McGee's are on there. Donegal Bees are there. LK Bikes are there, Levisha, is there. Donegal Pens, it's page after page after page. Watson Hire is there. You know, this barbers are there. So if you wanted to get a voucher or something along those lines. I seem to recall one of the earlier incarnations that you talked about 3 or 4 years ago. How long has it been running now, Anne-Marie?
Since 2020, Greg.
2020. I seem to think early on it was something like 100, 120, 130 businesses. I could be wrong in relation to that, but it certainly wasn't at the scale it is now. So yeah. It's grown in terms of business involvement over the years anyway.
Yeah, it is. We've about 400 businesses that are currently signed up to it. You know, and it's very easy for a business to sign up. We have a business portal on the site, so they can just sign in themselves, put up their own details and connect to their own website, and then put up, we encourage businesses to put up, you know, special offers or something that'll encourage, you know, the visitor to, or, you know, the website visitor to purchase their product, just to make it that little bit more attractive for the buyer as well. Because things, you know, people are finding the pinch as well, and things are difficult for a lot of people at the minute as well. So, and we all like to get a bargain as well. So it's just about, and it isn't necessarily about, you know, just about money off. It can be about, maybe, as I said before, about, teaming up with another business, or looking at kind of something, a good experience that maybe, might be, a weekend away with, you know, a spa package or something
lovely.
Like that.
So,
you know,
what a lovely gift to get that, because
wouldn't
it's like
just
a,
be lovely.
It's
yeah.
like a passport to peace,
isn't it? Just
and it's not something people tend to buy for themselves.
Exactly,
and it is a lovely gift to get. This reminds me a little bit about like our business awards, and I'll tell you why that is. In that you have, you know, multi-million euro turnover businesses in there. With businesses whereby they're smaller businesses, it's a judgment-free zone here. It can be anything from a sustainable swimsuit to a generator. You know, it's all there, so there's no excuse not to go in and leaf through it. And it's a handy URL, donegal.ie. And what I would suggest as well, Anne-Marie, and I'm not sure if you agree or disagree, not everyone can support businesses by buying. Maybe you're not in the market to buy at the moment. But if you're on social media, I'll tell you, sharing this website would be a fantastic boost, because, you know, you might have friends and relations locally or far away that might be able to see it and come in and support businesses that way. Because what we have seen is an explosion of online activity, Anne-Marie. I remember a lot of businesses, you know, they'd have that crappy landing page with just a number and you'd go, why? What's the point? But now, through various means and fast-forwarded, I think, because of COVID, a lot of these businesses have really good online spaces.
Yeah, absolutely. They've great online spaces. So a big part of the campaign is our social media campaign as well. So last year we were able to reach about 14 million people just through our social media posts and the marketing. And that wasn't just our marketing. It was all the businesses in the county marketing, all the supporters of the businesses marketing. We were able to use our Donegal ambassadors and our supporters as well, and as part of this campaign. So it kind of even goes back to our Love Donegal campaign as well. So there's a great kind of support and camaraderie for everything Donegal, including our Donegal businesses. And I suppose what we try and do with a lot of our campaigns is try and connect in with that and lean into that goodwill that's out there. And I suppose, as we always say, it's hard to meet somebody from Donegal who's not just absolutely delighted to be from Donegal, you know. So it's about kind of trying to lean into that and to support that as well. And in terms of this campaign, businesses can actually, we develop kind of the marketing collateral. So we have really nice like social media posts and imagery and things like that. So people can actually use that as well in their posts. So not every business has a social media, you know, person promoting and working on their campaigns. So we're trying to make it as easy as we can for businesses just to use the tools, if you like, that are there. And they again can get that through the business portal. Yeah. So it's like the font, the logos, the imagery, the social media frames, that type of thing.
And, you know,
so
just
it's quite
in
easy to do
to that, Anne-Marie, I think businesses need to realise that's we do want to go in store, but we do want to go online. And the way it is now, you've got supports from the likes of DLDC and others that can help in this space or put you in the right direction. But we also have some fantastic digital marketing businesses in this county, which are businesses in and of themselves. Some fantastic people who can get in there and, you know, do some of the work that you're talking of as well. Because people, that's what people want, and you need to have And there are tools there for shopping and all that kind of stuff as well. Right, so spread the word, spread the love, shop and buy Donegal, hashtag buy Donegal. If you get a really nice product as well in Donegal, post a picture of it in social media and use the hashtag buy Donegal as well, buy Donegal 2025. And it just helps spread the love and you can do something because, again, and sound like a scratched record, but these are the people that are employing people in this county, paying their mortgages and their bills, but also we tap up for a draw. You know, at Christmas, do you have an Isle voucher?
That's it. Absolutely.
Can you support this charity as well? So it's Donegal.ie, right? Yeah, Donegal.ie.
That's it. Or buy Donegal.ie. It'll take you directly to the website. That's it. Brilliant.
That's it. And share the love. All right, see you soon.
Okay, thanks very much,
bye-bye.
Greg. Thank you. Thanks for your support.
Anne-Marie Conlon, Head of Economic Development at Donegal County Council. Buy Donegal.ie or Donegal.ie and go in and see. And it's 10 pages of businesses that maybe you didn't even know existed. I was looking through, whilst paying attention to Anne-Marie, of course, I was looking through some of the businesses. And it's like our Business Matters podcast here. You know, you're learning all the while of these fantastic little businesses in different parts of our beautiful region. Another fantastic business, of course, is the Silver Tassie Hotel, and they're on board this week sponsoring the programme. Always a pleasure to have them on. And they're also giving away on Friday an indulgent Yonka Delight package at the Seascape Spa valued at €155. As I said yesterday, I had the opportunity to go into the Seascape Spa and it was a lovely experience, I must say. So this 2.5-hour spa package that you could win this week includes an aromatic steam session and cocoon room, a hot towel foot and back massage. Always the feet thing is like I do it, and I'm not on about actually the Silver Tassie. My bottom of my feet, tops of my feet, anywhere on my feet, incredibly sensitive. But they don't like you to keep your socks on. So you could get a hot towel foot and back cleanse, a Yonka back massage and hydrating facial, pressure point face and scalp massage. That's where I would nod off, to be honest with you, as soon as anyone goes near my face or head. A warm oil foot massage, finished off with a snooze room relaxation time and refreshments. So that could be yours. And it's also a fantastic gift idea, by the way. I can't emphasize that enough. If you don't know what to buy, to give someone an afternoon or a night over or a weekend for themselves, it is an amazing little gift. And this is just €155. It's a lot for that money, right? So you could get it for free, though, because we're giving this package away on Friday. So we're collecting your entries over the course of the week, and then we'll do the big draw on Friday. So if you want to enter, it's free to enter. You can text or WhatsApp to 086 60 25,000. It's certainly free on WhatsApp, and it's free for most of the regular phone packages. But which of these is not traditionally associated with Christmas? Mistletoe, A. Candy canes, B. Or C. Fireworks? We could have a debate on this one, but anyway, it's the question we have. Which of these is not traditionally associated with Christmas here in Ireland? A, mistletoe, B, candy canes, or C, fireworks? Send your answer, your name and where you're from, to 086 60 25,000, and if you're correct, we'll throw you into the hat, and one lucky name will be pulled out to get that Yonka package, the Yonka Delight package from the Seascape Spa at the Silver Tassie, as a prize, which I think is blooming fantastic. Donegal TD Padraig McLaughlin says figures received through a door question show that the government continues to break the law when it comes to children with disabilities in Donegal. And Deputy McLaughlin joins me on the programme now. Thanks for chatting to us today, Padraig.
Good morning, Greg.
So I want to break this down right from the get-go, because the families affected will know exactly what you're talking about. But I think these things need to be generally understood, and many will, but just to make sure they do. So give us a scenario. What children are we talking about here, and what path would they be on before they become one of these 346 children overdue an assessment?
Well, basically, obviously, these are young children where the parents and their GPs and would suspect that there is a disability. And under the law, and this is law that's been in place since 2005, the Disability Act, that assessment of needs, so that's basically where A, you assess if the child does indeed have a disability, what's the nature and extent of the disability, And then, of course, what services are needed to support the child. And obviously, as they move towards school places, it's really important that you can build up a sense of here's the needs that a school will have. So, I mean, obviously, if you know there's X amount of children, here's the nature of their disabilities, you can start to plan ahead. So on so many levels, this is important. But the most important thing to stress to your listeners, Greg, is that this is a legal requirement to do the assessment of need within 6 months. And repeatedly, the government have been breaking the law. You're now moving to as long as 27 months waiting for these assessments. As I say, right now in Donegal, 346 children are awaiting their assessment. 55 children this year. Only one were done within the legal framework of 6 months. So there's a serious failure.
Up until now, 55 children have been assessed this year in Donegal.
That's correct.
So that's very little over one a week. What is it? One person that works a day? Like, how could that possibly be one a week? Bar the shouting.
Yeah. You know? And the problem that we have, Greg, is the resourcing of the service and then recruiting the necessary professionals, retaining them. That clearly has failed. And it isn't just about, and it's important to know, it's not just about the assessment of needs. It continues on when the children actually have been assessed and we know what they need. They're not getting the support services. It's across the board. It could be physiotherapy. It could be occupational therapists. It could be psychologists, social workers. There's a range of skill sets that are needed. And as you know, Greg, as you've covered this extensively on your show, we just have a real big problem.
So of these children... When they're described as seeking an assessment for a disability, this is not just physical disability, or is it?
It's across the board. So it could be intellectual disability, physical disability, and obviously it's more difficult when it's intellectual difficulty to fully understand and assess the supports that will be required. But it's not even just about that family, you know, that child and their family. It's about planning ahead to make sure that when they come into the school system, there's going to be the necessary supports. You know yourself with Little Angels. I mean, it was a crazy situation earlier this year where you had at least 10 families whose children, these are children with profound disabilities, who were going to be left outside because of the failure to plan ahead and to know exactly how many children, what type of disabilities that they have, what are the supports they need. So this has a knock-on effect. You know, if you get your assessments of needs wrong, if they're being delayed, it continues. So right through the system, Greg, you're seeing these problems.
You know, obviously, there is the issue as well of early intervention dependent on what the disability might be. To wait 27 months, you know, what progress is lost over that period of time? What opportunities are missed? How does that have, what impact might that have on a child as they continue to develop? You talk of breaking the law. What law is being broken?
So it's the Disability Act 2005, and in that there's a legal requirement to provide an assessment of needs within 6 months. And your listeners may know of a teenager, remarkable young woman, Cara Darmody. She has two brothers who have autism at different levels, and she's seen it in her own family. So she's actually campaigned and, you know, come to the Oireachtas. And I think when you're living through this, you're obviously, when it's your lived experience, it's so powerful. But families shouldn't have to do this. Like, I've met so many families with disabilities, their children with disabilities over the years, and they're exhausted. You know, they're trying to advocate support for their children. They're tired, they're exhausted, but then they're having to go on the likes of your show, they're having to campaign, meet TDs, meet the HSE, try and meet the minister. You know, this is going on and on. It just isn't acceptable. It just isn't acceptable that not only are these children being failed, but right across the system. And it continues, as I say, when the children get their assessment needs, they're then waiting on the supports. They're not getting them. Then if you look at respite services in Donegal, you know, for children, it just isn't there. The most recent case I spoke in the Dáil, which was harrowing, two families who you know, their children needed psychiatric support, but the CAM service don't have a qualified consultant to deal with children with intellectual disabilities. Therefore, their children weren't getting the support. The families were being locked in their own home. You know, so this has devastating impacts for families. And, you know, as a society, and I always say this is beyond politics. Like, I don't believe that there are people in Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, independents and government who... But they're failing, you know, and we have to sort this out.
What is the solution, though? Because is it about money, or is it about having people qualified to work in these areas and to take up posts where they might seem vacant? Obviously, we're going to focus on Donegal figures, but it's over 16,000 nationally, so it's not unique to us here. Is it a lack of investment, or is it a lack of expertise in the area to actually hire?
Well, it's a number of things. It was historically a lack of investment. In more recent times, it's the inability to recruit people to know the numbers that need to be trained to have them ready. I mean, I've seen in Donegal just how we're playing catch up, and I mean across all of the specialities who would work with children with disabilities, you're recruiting and you're short across all of the specialities, all of those areas. So you need to address that, and then you need to retain people, make sure that they're not overwhelmed, burned out when they're working within that system. So we've got this wrong as a government, have got it wrong, and it's getting worse. So there has to be an acceptance. And what was the offer that the government were making? They were going to change the legislation so they wouldn't be breaking the law. They were going to solve the issue and accept that the standard that was put in place all of those years ago was 6 months. And that was absolutely a reasonable time frame. And you need to meet that standard. You need to plan ahead and get this right. So, I mean, so many families, and like I'd say there's not a listener today that doesn't know a family who have a child with disabilities. It's hardly a listener listening to the show today. Those families are being failed, in some cases cruelly failed. Like, we had a harrowing meeting recently where a parent shared what they'd been through. And I can't actually tell you at this time what the parents said, but it was absolutely harrowing what they had gone through. Right. They were failed by this system, and we have to do better. We have to keep talking about this, putting a light on this until it's sorted out.
Thanks for your time this morning. I do appreciate it. That was Sinn Féin Deputy Padraig McLaughlin there. If that's a story that affects you, or you want to have a comment in relation to that, 086 60 25,000. Greg, have you seen the judgments being handed out regarding road deaths? People are walking out of the courtrooms with community service. We seem to talk the talk and then not walk the walk. And there's always mitigating circumstances, and everyone's got a story and no one meant it. And everyone has got people that rely on them. Yeah, so I get where you're coming from. And, you know, it's about intent as well. So if, you know, if you fire a gun into a crowd, you might not be targeting a particular an individual, but, you know, if you hit someone in the head, you know, the intent, or you should have known what you were doing. So if you drive like a crazy person and you cost someone else their life, you kind of knew that you should know anyway that there were consequences for your actions, but it doesn't seem to be like that. A caller says, I'd like to commend Donegal County Council following the significant step taken yesterday by passing a motion urging the Sinn Féin motion, urging the Irish government to begin preparations for Irish unity. The conversation on Irish unity is advancing, and it is time the Irish government showed the leadership required and start planning now and stop kicking the can down the road. Micheál Martin, though, has held a series of events around the country in that space as well, though, too. So it's not just the opposition, but I do understand where you're coming from. I had 5 phone calls from people in the Churchill area last night. Children were walking with no high-vis vests on them at 4:45, 5 p.m. They were working dark clothing and so close to being knocked down. With the dark evenings, it's so important to wear something reflective. And I'm not sure if they were throwing from school, but I've said it on the programme before, I do really worry. I understand that kids are very fashion conscious, and often they don't even want to wear a jacket, let alone some luminous piece of clothing. But in the mornings and in the evenings, when they're getting on and off buses, they're invisible. They are invisible. And these wet mornings with the rain and cars approaching, and they often are on the opposite side of where the bus is, and you know, it's just a accident, and it wouldn't be an accident. That's the problem, you see. It's just a tragedy waiting to happen. I don't know what we do about it, even if there were these clip on our bands, anything at all. But going and coming from school, it's this space almost that exists not in the general conversation about pedestrians on the road. Because a lot of people, we talk about pedestrians on the road, the walkers or the doom. But there's this cohort for certain times of the day that are out in the road with no jacket on, certainly nothing fluorescent, and it's dark and it's wet, and you just wonder how long it'll be before someone very tragically is clipped. And then we'll be talking about it till the cows come home. Now, there are calls for the government to bring in stricter regulations to make some beds safe rather than introducing a ban altogether. And that call's coming from the Sunbed Association of Ireland. Its chairperson is Gary Lipman. Gary, thank you for joining me. Good morning.
Good morning, Greg. Thank you for inviting me onto the show.
Right, so you believe a move to an all-out ban of sunbeds is not the right move?
Well, first of all, before there's any talk about a ban, Ireland needs to implement the existing regulations, which is not being done. And that was our message to the Department of Health yesterday. We are the Sunbed Association, and we represent small business owners across the country, places like Sligo, Carlow, Dublin, Cork, Kildare and beyond. And our members have signed up to a code of practice that ensures that when a client comes in, their age is verified, in most cases double verified. We make sure their skin is appropriate to tan, and we look after them. Now, these are professional business owners that care about their clients, and they shouldn't be penalised for salons that don't operate in the way that they should and who wouldn't be members of our association. So we would encourage your listeners, if they want to use a sunbed, to go on our website, just Google Sunbed Association, and put in the salon finder, and you'll find a member near you, and the clients can be assured that they'll be properly looked after.
Based on someone's skin, Gary, how do you determine if it's safe to tan, just based on their skin, if you're a sunbed operator?
Well, let's talk about the people we don't want. We don't want the people with very sensitive skin, very fair hair, freckles that burn easily and don't tan. They should fake tan. But the vast majority of the Irish public can tan if looked after properly by properly trained staff. And that's what we're encouraging. A talk of a ban will, for example, in Australia, where a ban was implemented, people started using not only sunbeds at home for themselves, but asking their friends and family to come and use them for a cost, and almost operating businesses from home. And of course, there's no regulations there. It's totally unsupervised, and it will have the opposite effect of what the Department of Health and indeed ourselves would want. We want a properly regulated industry where we work in harmony with the Department of Health, ensuring that all salons are trained, know how to look after their clients. We are the solution, not the problem, and we want to help.
The reality, though, coming from the HSE, the NHS, people who are specialists in skin, Gary, that I speak to, is that there is no safe level of sunbed use, and there's no safe skin to use a sunbed. That using a sunbed significantly increases your risk of developing skin cancer, including melanoma, which is deadly. So that's what the health experts are saying, Gary. But you're telling me that your members can determine who could safely use a sunbed.
Okay. First of all, a lot of work was done by the European Commission many years ago, about 20 years ago, to determine what is a safe level. And all sunbeds after that were produced to that level. And that is equivalent to the sun, for example, on a Mediterranean beach, minute for minute. Now, that has been implemented across the EU, including the UK, but not in Ireland. Mm. And we've been calling upon the Department of Health for many times to implement that.
I know you are quoting one piece of evidence there, but the European Commission's independent scientific committee themselves say there is no safe limit for exposure to UV radiation from sunbeds.
To quote the full sentence, as you have not, it said there is, we cannot determine what the safe level is. Mm. Therefore, we have to say that there is no safe level. Mm. But they have determined it after that, where all sunbeds are produced now to that standard, but not in Ireland. And we're calling upon the Irish government to implement that standard that should have been done over 20 years ago and could have been implemented in the sunbed regulations in 2014. They have failed to do so, and we're struggling to understand why they wouldn't.
Okay. Because so Gary, just one question. I don't want to be argumentative, but, and I'm not being, I hope you don't think so, but from a personal perspective, do you believe some people can safely use sunbeds with zero increased risk of skin cancer? Is that your view?
I believe in responsible tanning, where when a client comes in, they're properly assessed and their sessions are recorded, and we make sure they don't overdo it. Let's put this into perspective. A modern-day sunbed will have the same output minute per minute as the Mediterranean sun. Now, a typical session would be, say, 10 to 12 minutes. That would be, for a whole year, something like 10 to 12 hours for the year. Now, you know and I know, when you go on holiday, you see people sunbathing from literally morning through to sundown. They could do that in one day. That is exactly what we are against. It needs to be slow, it needs to be proportionate, and it needs to be controlled. It's responsible tanning. Mm. It is burning that's the problem, not tanning. And our members make sure that people do not burn. That's the key difference. Responsible tanning, not burning. It's common sense and sunburn protect prevention.
What's your views on sunbed businesses renting sunbeds out for home use?
Renting sunbeds out for home? Mm. Now we represent professional suntan salons, okay, that have clients come into their salons. We don't have members that rent out for people in their homes, because of course there's no control there at all. Mm. So we represent professional tanning salons that have trained staff and make sure that the clients are protected. We are not here to defend home sunbeds. That's a completely different
area. But I just wanted to be clear. Okay. Yes. Right, we shall see. That's the view of the Sunbed Association of Ireland. Obviously, the government has its own plans. But thank you very much indeed, Gary. I do appreciate your time. Gary Lippman there, Chair of the Sunbed Association of Ireland. And we were talking off air there, and it would seem that the use of sunbeds is on a boom. There are lots of people using them. Even though, he correctly quoted the European Commission, but it depends how you want to view it. The European Commission say sunbeds should not emit more UV radiation than tropical sun at present, but they say it's not possible to give a safe limit for preventing long-term effects, which is why you don't say, right, well, you can have 5 cigarettes a day and that won't give you cancer, but 10 might. So what you do is you ban it altogether. It's carcinogenic. And that's why they don't give a limit on it, because you can't, right? Because every person is individual. But the HSE is clear in their view that there is no safe level of sunbed use. And with that knowledge, and with knowing that skin cancer is one of the most, you know, predominant cancers in this country, thousands and thousands and thousands of people still opt to use sunbeds. They know the dangers, but then they see the short-term benefits of a tan and they make that decision, and it's a conscious decision. I don't think anyone doubts the science. I doubt it. I don't think anyone doubts the science, or maybe they do. I don't know. You know, I've heard someone. I heard someone talking on an interview, and I poo you not. They believe 5G gave you cancer, right? But they also believed that sunblock was a scam and also kind of exacerbated cancer, and that you're better off without it. So on one hand, they were saying 5G gives you cancer, and then on the other hand, they were trying to make out that sunscreen was bad for you. And I was thinking, is this for real? What am I listening to here? What's worse, sunbeds are putting oil on and going out in the sun? Well, either, you know, what's worse? Do people put oil on and go out in the sun? I suppose maybe they do. But again, it comes down to someone's... It's like smoking. You know, if someone wants to smoke, they'll smoke. A caller says, it's high time people leave fully grown adults to make their own decision. I don't smoke and had a good diet. I'll take my chances on the sunbed. This is where I get where you're coming from, and I'm not judging, right? Really, genuinely, I'm not judging. Trust me on this. But I suppose collectively we're all responsible, God forbid, if you get melanoma, cancer, because, you know, we all fund the health service, and, you know, we all sort of experience potential pressures that are put on it for no reason. So, of course, you are, but it's not without consequence for other people either. God forbid if you were to get cancer. But you want to take your chances, and that's fine. People take chances all of the time. Elaine Kennedy joins me on the programme now. Elaine, thank you for your time. Good morning to you.
Hello, how are you?
I'm doing good. Right, now, Elaine, you're in the situation of being just 55 years old, but face going into a nursing home. You have MS.
Yeah.
And I should say you're under the area of the Northern Trust, just to be clear. So tell us your story, yeah. Elaine.
Probably at the beginning of October, I lost my care company that had been with me for 7.5 years. They withdrew care. At the last minute, another care company said they could provide 3 of the calls, but they can only offer me 1 hour in the morning for the shower call when I'm assessed for 1.5 hours, and it takes over 1 hour. And so that's not been able to be completed in the time. I don't have any bed calls, so I've had to pay for carers, friends that I know, to come and help me to get into bed. Otherwise, my social worker had said, oh, you might have to go to bed at your tea call. Well, my tea call is, the latest is between 3 and 4. Some days it's between 2 and 3, so I would have been in bed from 4 in the afternoon to 10 o'clock the next morning, which it must be unlawful.
I mean, I've heard people in that situation 6, 7, 8 in the evening, but 3 or 4 in the afternoon. I thought the evening time was bad, but late afternoon is crazy. So, I mean, obviously, the Northern Trust are suggesting a nursing home, right? Which obviously you're not a fit for because you're 55. Would the money it would cost for you to be looked after in a nursing home not be better spent giving you extra support to allow you to stay in your own home?
Wouldn't you think so? But the trust, I mean, one of the answers they gave me is, you know, it's well publicised kind of on the media how difficult this area is to staff. And, you know, how long have we known about this issue? I had this problem in 2012. Same issue faced with a care home. And here I am again, 13 years later, same time of year. I mean, I was nearly in tears there. I heard your ads for Christmas ads.
Yeah.
People are preparing for the season, and I am worrying about not even being in my home next week. It's ridiculous. When are the trust going to get grip on it and offer us what's legal? There's so many laws protecting me to stay in my own home, but not, it seems, when it comes to the trust finding the care.
I think, in credit to you, that you've been vocal about this between you and your family advocating on it. Am I right in saying there's another meeting with the Northern Health and Social Care Trust tomorrow? I note in a statement they say they're committed to working with the independent sector providers to secure an appropriate care package for you as soon as possible. So how does that statement, those words, that meeting fit into the story from your perspective, Elaine?
Okay, well, that meeting was arranged. It makes me laugh. That meeting was arranged about a week ago. I don't think that meeting's to discuss the care going forward. It was about issues with the current care company. The person who's coming is not, in my view, is not senior enough to be presenting anything new. And yes, that statement that they keep saying they're committed to work, and it just means they're putting it out there. They have a brokerage system where it goes on a computer, and all the care companies look at that every day, see who's needing care, and if they've got spaces, they say, oh yeah, I'll take that client. you know, that's as much as they're doing right now. They're not doing anything over and above. Yes, they do have the power to find alternative sources of care, but it hasn't come into play yet.
You have a Just Giving page, sorry, has been established to try and pay for private care. How has that been going, Elaine? I mean, no one wants to do that, right? But, I mean, you talked about the emotion listening to an advert about Christmas. We'll do anything we can to stay at home for as long as we can, of course.
Well, that was it. I was left, like you say, that care of going to bed at tea time, and it just wasn't an option. So I just appealed to anybody who'd ever been a carer for me, you know, can you help? And because they see my situation and want to help, they're going over and above. But these girls have other jobs. They're coming out of ours. It's not a sustainable option. I wish that it was. The trust, you know, put this out as a direct payment, so that's one of the options available to me. I wish that was a viable option for people in my situation, but my care is quite complex. I need 4 calls a day. They're an hour, morning calls an hour and a half. The rest of them an hour at a time. It's very difficult to find that staff.
Yeah.
And if you employed just a team of 4 or 6 people, they couldn't make a wage out of it, so they would have to have another job, which means they're not fully flexible. So I don't know how you make that work long term. Mm. Believe me, I'd love it as the option other than a care company, because these care companies are running a business. They're running on profit. They want as many clients as they can get for as little time as they can get. Mm. They don't like complex ones like mine for an hour. They'd rather run in for 20 minutes and a cup of tea, give medication, whatever, and fill up their day like that and have carers run ragged. Now, they rarely get breaks. They feel underpaid. I understand why there's high turnover and it doesn't help that the health minister is not giving them a pay rise. You know, we're not going to solve the situation just by doing the same thing we've always done.
It's very, very tricky. Elaine, listen, I wish you, hopefully that meeting, it sounds to me like the Northern Trust is saying it's not our fault, we're looking, and we care so much about Elaine that we're going to have interim care until such time, you know, but there's always a solution, and I hope that solution is found for you and your family. Elaine, thank you for joining us, and best wishes to you going forward.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye, Elaine. That's Elaine Kennedy from Derry there. A caller says, how is radiation good for your body? When you put food in a microwave, it cooks in a few minutes. Same with sunbeds. Well, it's like everything. There's different forms of radiation and level and what have you. But I understand where you're coming from. They say to be nice to be workers in shops at Christmas. What happens if the staff are not nice to you? Some of them don't even smile or speak, says a listener. Friendliness in shops. I find people unfriendly in shops so rarely that it stands out like a sore thumb. My general experience is that people are great in shops. In retail, it's a tough old job, retail. I've done a bit of it myself and I've had family in it as well. But generally, my experience is that workers are nice, even in tough circumstances. But some apparently don't even smile or speak, and you're spending your hard-earned money. A caller says, and I'll throw this out to the wider audience and we can pick up on it tomorrow. My child is being bullied on the school bus by a child going to another school. How do we go about this one? Well, firstly, what I would do is do whatever it takes, or advice is to do whatever it takes, i.e. go to that school and say my child shares a school bus, and name the child and say, what do you have in place to deal with the situation? That's what I would do in the first instance. So I'd go to the school of the child, ask to speak to the principal or a deputy principal and say, you know, my child's on a bus with the child that's in this school and they're being bullied. What policies or plans do you have in place, or what can you do to address that? That's what I would do in the first instance, to be honest with you. And if any listeners have any further advice, get in touch with us, 086 60 25000. But that's where we leave it for Tuesday's show. Thank you so much for listening to the programme. It's so much that we appreciate it so much. We're back tomorrow morning at 9.